Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a vodcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished social entrepreneur, Shweta Chari from Mumbai, India. Shweta, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Ashutosh. It's really nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Shweta is the co-founder and CEO of the Open Tree Foundation. And she has an interesting project called Toy Bank, and we'll talk about that. She's a star social entrepreneur of the year, and Shweta has been recognized, awarded, and felicitated several times. So Shweta, let's talk about Toy Bank development and through play today. Tell me about this venture.
This is now a 17-year-old venture, in a sense. Mm-hmm. I started this when I was 21 years old, straight out of engineering. Mm-hmm. I didn't register this as any entity or a company or anything at the time. Mm-hmm. I honestly didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. It was just an idea, which is why the name Toy Bank just stuck and we just went with it. Mm-hmm. As the name suggests, at the time, we were literally a bunch of volunteers. Mm-hmm. And how did this all even get started, right? Mm-hmm. As soon as I finished my last Viva, in my engineering Viva, mm-hmm. I used to pass this kind of a small home on the way back from college. And I used to keep wondering what this is all about. Mm-hmm. I just randomly just got on the bus and just went in to inquire, like, what do you guys do? Turns out it's a nonprofit. I didn't have much knowledge back then. I'm talking about in 2004. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what, I knew NGO and stuff, but I just had no idea about what this, mm-hmm. this whole space is about. Took permission following days, started volunteering with them. And with my background, they said teach them maths and sciences because that's where they really struggle. I also sincerely said, yes, please mind my age. I was just mm-hmm. 21. I was mm-hmm. super energetic and extremely driven by, I don't know exactly what, I wanted to do something. Mm-hmm. I was sort of fed up of the 4 years because while we got educated in everything, I didn't feel very connected to what I was learning. Mm-hmm. I started not being able to relate, which is another aspect. But what I couldn't get is the correlation between what I was studying and what real life was about all around me.
Right.
So this was very exciting. I was like, okay, this I'm really going to work with some tiny humans, mm-hmm. and I'll be able to change their world and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I came from a very selfish approach where I was like, I'll do all of this. I had no idea about what the problems they were actually dealing with. Mm-hmm. Weeks passed. I got fed up because the kids weren't really interested in what I was doing for them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. None of them even knew my name. I didn't even know all of their names either. And that got me frustrated because like, I'm trying to do something so good here and nobody's interested. Mm. I took permission to not teach them. I thought I'm a really bad teacher. And I said, maybe I shouldn't teach. Maybe I should just, first of all, understand what's really going on with these kids. Mm-hmm. So that's when I pressed the pause button. Mm. And I realized that I surveyed the organization and I saw that they have some beautiful board games, mm-hmm. but all in wrapped condition, all mm-hmm. in those plastic wrappers. They are not using it. They had a handful, it wasn't a lot for the size of kids, number of kids that were there. Mm-hmm. And then I just looked around and through the day for a few hours. I saw, like me, there were a bunch of other teachers coming in, tuition teachers with different subjects and stuff. And these kids were going to a local government school. Mm-hmm. So that's when I realized that I'm just one of those many teachers. Mm-hmm. So when are these kids playing? Like, what's going on? What's recreation for them? Mm-hmm. So one thing led to the other, my mind just kept ticking. So I just took permission. And I said, is it okay if I just interact with the kids and I just play around with them? And I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to do. Mm. They were sweet and they said yes. And they gave me a time. They said, as long as you're a regular and sincere, you can come every day. I said, okay, I will. Mm. So the next day I took my Discman speakers those days with my, I'm heavily into classic rock. Mm-hmm. I used to play the violin. I used to be a part of the Gothic rock band mm-hmm. in college. So I took all of these beautiful music with me. I even took Indian classical, Bhimsen Joshi and mm-hmm. Zakir Hussain and all them. And I played these CDs to these kids and I used to tell them, you know, yeah, this is that genre. I played Jim Morrison, my favorite. I told him all about the Doors. It was very, very nice to interact with these kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started listening to their stories.
So right.
That really went the days after. And we used to play. We used to play land and water. We used to, I don't know if you people are aware of games like Sarkali and Catch and Cook and Chor Police and all those kinds of funny games.
Right.
Box cricket. We didn't have a cricket bat, so we picked up some random piece of wood. Mm-hmm. But lovely time. And the kids like started opening up. And they became my close friends. I became their close friend. And I realized how easy it was for us to connect with each other. All the barriers of language, whatever, economics, all kinds of biases just broke. And I could just, even age, right? I could just relate to them and so could they. And I really got their stories. I mean, I learned a lot about how these kids were not orphans. They run away from homes. They were all stories straight out of the movie called Lion.
Mm-hmm.
They literally sat in a train, come to Bombay. Their aspiration in life was to grow up and become Salman Khan.
Right.
For some reason. And the bling of the city just attracted them. So really speaking, that's when play sort of got to my, that thing came into my head. That it's so easy to relate. And so that's when I just said, okay, where are your toys? Let's collect toys. So I just wrote emails to my friends. And I had a big gap because I had got a job, but I wasn't sure I wanted to take it. So I had time on my hands. And I was like any other engineering, post-engineering, wanted to take a GRE and this and that. So I had time. So I was just like figuring my personal life. So till I figure it out, I'll do all of these things. So that's how the collection started. And when we sent the first email, like I was inundated with, I didn't realize that people wanted to donate their stuff and what stuff came. I'm talking about only toys. I didn't, I refused to take anything else. I said, no, I want to give children games and toys. And from the month of June, July, all the way, we kept going till November. I gathered a few of my friends to help me sort because my hands alone weren't enough. So we got people to come home. That's really how it started. Like, and somebody donated recycled wrapping paper, said, hey, you're doing something cool. Why don't you just wrap your toys? And they gave us so much wrapping paper, lasted us 3 years.
Wow.
So we, I had no idea. Like, that's how it really started. And I just kept deferring my master's. I said, no, I'll do it later. I took up a full-time job because I this one thing I've been taught is to be financially stable. And somehow I just managed to do the job and run this as a volunteer. So the first 5 years, this was not registered. But this registered only end of 2009, early 2010.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. You know, I remember, I'm much, much older, but I remember forever when I used to think when our children were growing up, that I wish, you know, and after a certain time, the attention span of the child is, you know, shifts to some other toy, but the toys just keep accumulating in your cupboard. So I think you've actually done people a favor by taking toys away from them and giving it to people who can use them. Amazing. So tell me, how does Toy Bank work? Can anyone donate toys to you?
So this was all the way back, right? Now we really evolved as an organization. So I never ended up going abroad, by the way. So I just moved into this full time. 2010, I quit my corporate job and I said, let's do this. So I registered this. Little did I know, ignorance is bliss. That's a good thing. Little did I know what I was truly getting into.
Right.
But I thoroughly enjoyed my time. The last 12 years, 11 years has been an unbelievable experience. I think, I mean, I keep saying that, my God, this is the hardest year I've worked. This is the hard. Every year is hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I work a lot. I work like a crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
People think that we're running a nonprofit or doing something good and charitable is easy. It's not. It's the hardest job in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to keep your emotions in check and stay focused and not get carried away. So these are things I've learned along the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different. We used to seriously, you know, do massive campaigns, go to colleges, go to corporate offices. I used to pop up, have those pop-ups on Sundays in the housing societies when they used to have their general body meeting and just talk about play. That's how really it all began. So go in my old Fiat Palio car and I used to collect toys from everywhere, literally do this all by myself in the early days. But today we are an organization that truly stands on what we call as right to play, mm-hmm. like propagating play for play's sake. Mm-hmm. And everything else is just like a medium. So toys become a medium of achieving that. Mm-hmm. Games become a... But the idea is to really sort of mainstream play. Mm-hmm. So we now are a different model. We collaborate with other nonprofits. We have close to 85 partner organizations.
Wow.
And we've set up close to 500 play-to-learn centers now. Mm. Latest numbers are out. So in all of these partners, it could be government agencies or low-income private schools, you name it. Mm-hmm. The shelter homes, remand homes, community-based organizations, like you name it, all kinds of kids, all kinds of organizations. And we don't house our own kids, right? We always believe in it has to be a collaborative model. And it's like a jigsaw puzzle. Like if we fit all the pieces, then the child's life sort of is complete in a sense, or the early childhood experience is complete. Mm-hmm. You have food and nutrition, you have excellent infrastructure and education, and you have play spaces that create safe spaces for kids. And children then learn to learn far better than they used to. And that's the kind of model we are creating in what we are today. So the name doesn't justify, but our children relate to this name, so we've decided to like stick with it. But really, really speaking, it's a play to learn program that is running very, very strongly right now.
Very interesting. And you know, you said you've got 500 play to learn centers in Maharashtra. How are these organized? Do you have a large team of people working with you, or are these in collaboration with other partners?
So we are close to 30 people in the team. It's not a very large team. Yeah. And our budgets are also extremely modest. Mm-hmm. It works well because together in the collaboration, it seriously not only saves costs, but we are able to do our work much faster. See, I want to see the change in my lifetime, Ashutosh. I'm very serious about that.
Absolutely.
I used to say this very frivolously before. It's like, I don't care about legacy. I don't want to, you know, I want to be forgotten. I want the cost to be remembered, this and that. I genuinely, as I get older, I'm in a bigger rush. Like I want to make sure that the children in India like grow up with play, and play-based learning becomes a common language. And we're steadily moving in that direction. It's a very simple thing. We work with the government school teachers, even if it's not government, it's nonprofits, it's other community-based. But the first approach is to work with the caretakers, teachers, whoever they may be, parents, to essentially sensitize them about what is the meaning of the power of play. Why is play so important? Why play-based learning becomes so relevant for our children, because they're also first generation learners of all of these new concepts and approaches.
So let me interrupt you a little bit. Why is play so important? Tell me for our viewers and listeners, and what does it do for children?
So I'll give you like examples because that'll make more sense. So one time I'll give you my example, my direct experience, right? One time I went into one of the centers where we work, and there are about 30, 35 children in that center in that period of time. And we had a 2-hour play session planned for these kids. And there was this particular girl. Every time I went to that center, it's not just on that particular day, but every time I used to go to the center, this girl would never get involved. She would never participate. So earlier she used to get angry and she used to throw things around, and she used to be extremely, extremely aggressive. And the other kids around used to label her, and you know, I mean, this is pre-toy bank, so they used to not make friends with her. They would be very angry with her, or mostly afraid of her. We started our sessions, this kid would just not participate. She'd sit in the corner, she used to observe very quietly. And I keep wondering, some of our team members wonder, how do we get her involved? She should be interested. But we used to give her those solo games. We used to keep it next to her. And we used to say, Kella, if you want to play, you play. But she wouldn't. She used to be very adamant. Then week 2, week 3, she started at least opening those boxes. started playing games like Brain Vita, Tangram, simple games for a child to sit alone and just keep playing endlessly. A few weeks later, she joined the group. Kids got scared, but she joined the group and they enrolled her. And we had lovely circle sessions of play activities. And then for the first time, she actually talked. She said, she actually expressed and she said to us, she somewhere had an awareness that everyone was scared of her. Mm-hmm. So she just told us, don't be afraid of me.
Wow.
She said that she had a really, really bad time because I think she had gone through a very bad case of domestic violence at home. Mm-hmm. And this kid was being abused. And she was very frustrated because she couldn't do anything to save her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And she should get her entire anger out it's completely at the wrong time, wrong place, and everyone is scared of her. So she actually expressed herself and she said that, I want to play with everybody. Can you all be my friend?
Wow.
And I'm talking about this one instance, like this, there are thousands of stories. I can sit endlessly and keep telling you stories like this. We work with this group of kids who the job there is that they're petty thieves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Their parents and the background they come from, their entire locality is job they call it a job is they kind of petty thieves.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they've normalized this, so the kids grow up thinking that that's what they have to do. We work with kids with that background, and like, you cannot just tell these kids that this is right and this is wrong.
Mm.
Somewhere the approach through play, what it does is, it allows for kids to analyze and understand and retrospect and introspect for themselves, what's right from wrong, and how they could stick with so-called right, so that their life kind of shapes up to be a better, make better life choices, make better decisions in their lives as they grow up.
Mm.
And this continuously keeps happening through play-based learning.
Mm.
It allows the child to think independently.
Mm.
And I think that's a very fundamental problem we are able to then solve out for. Mm. There are other problems that will emerge, but at least the child will be able to deal with those problems differently.
Mm. Fascinating. So Shweta, I have time for two more questions, and both these are quotes that I picked up from when I was reading about you. So you speak of bridging the gap between at-risk children and their mental well-being. Help me understand this with an example.
Especially now, this makes a lot of sense because we have in this pandemic seen, it's not just about the lesser privileged children, but all children around, we've been noticing how they've been really affected because of just sitting at home or whatever. The situations at home is very different. So it's a very simple thing. It's these kids, I'll give an example again. Like there is if you give a soft toy to a child, this child will give this toy a name, will sleep with it in the night, will hug it. This child may not have real human friends, but this toy or this piece of thing has become his or her best friend.
Correct.
It doesn't matter. There's no gender or anything. And these kids, and there's enough evidence to prove scientifically how play and, certain types of games and toys specially calm the kids down and make them feel less abandoned and wanted and cared for. It doesn't matter what your economic background is.
Right.
We see this time and again through the lesser privileged kids.
Mm.
And these are children who are genuinely at risk. They've already lost so much.
Mm.
They don't believe their life is going to get any better.
Mm.
They don't talk about it, but they live their lives like that.
Mm.
And then they follow the trail of what their parents or the others, elders around them have been doing.
Right.
And then it's like a cycle that never breaks.
Mm.
So this is what it means, and that's where the whole line comes. It's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men and women. Frederick Douglass stopped at men, but we've added the and women. And we've seen this over and over again with our kids, like how resilient they are, how they grow up with more positive childhood memories.
Mm.
Something like they shouldn't be growing up to forget their childhood. They have to grow up to remember their childhood with all the positive things. That's what play-based learning, play experiences allows for these children as they grow up.
And my last question to you, and I come back to the government. What is the government doing to support development of children by supporting organizations like Toy Bank?
It's a good question and great timing. We're very happy that the government actually in the National Education Policy 2020 has somewhere inserted play-based learning as a core way for early childhood development.
Wow.
It actually does now recognize the value of children growing up with play experiences, curiosity building and all of that. So they don't clearly say that play does this, but they are using it as a tool, which is fair enough. It's okay. We are very happy about it. But it's taken a long time. We've been training our teachers for the last 17 years on play-based approach. And it was the biggest challenge we had was that people didn't get the cause. If there's so much of hunger and poverty in India, what's the point of play? That connection of how play stands at an equal level of education and poverty. It's still not being understood, but it's being at least brought up to align with easily understood causes like education. So we're like, okay, if learning outcomes can get better through play is very important for us. Very so I really feel like the government somewhere is at least moving in the right direction now, finally, on these aspects. And I just hope that some point that they right to play becomes a fundamental core policy. The policy level change, like how you have right to education. Right to play should be something that at least we as an organization are working towards that to make that a reality so that it becomes a common language again on how teachers teach and how children learn.
Fascinating. So I've just got one more question that I have to ask you. We spoke about the government, but in a country like ours, where parents are always telling children, come first in class, go to the head of the line, how are parents and teachers reacting to play as a part of the curriculum?
Very, very interesting question. We have this session. Typically, we have our play-based sessions for the lesser privileged kids in the centers, in the communities, in the basties, right? At one point, there was something very interesting which happened. Our children from the communities, they conducted a play session for their parents.
I see.
It was some sort of a public holiday and the parents were, these are daily wage laborers. They could be doing all kinds of odd jobs. So they may not be available for us on a daily basis. But for this particular session, we invited the parents and our kids conducted this session for their parents.
Wow.
And it was a... we all, I think, wept a little after that whole thing because the parents came back saying that for those moments, they forgot all their problems. Like they completely were in that world of play with their kids and they realized how much they had learned in just those 2 hours. And they're like, can our children keep coming? Can we also come and play with our kids? So in the pandemic, we saw a lot of interaction with parents and children sitting at home and playing our games. We provide a lot of play-based learning in the pandemic. And the teachers have lapped this up. It's difficult initially, but they incorporate this style of teaching. They use material that we provide, the playbooks, in the classrooms. And we are training them, right? We conduct power play workshops for our teachers endlessly. So they've started incorporating this. They come back, the first thing they say is, now the children are learning better. Grades are getting better. The overall school marks are coming up. So they're still interested in academia and academics and marks and all of those things. But at least they're able to see the concepts are being understood by the children. And somewhere the teachers are very happy. You know, at least now they understand why this is happening. The why of things and not just the rote learning is very, very important for our teachers. So somewhere they also feel like, you know, we work with, in all the centers, we have close to about 379 schools that we partnered with in Maharashtra. These are Jilla Parishad schools in rural districts. And it's every day I get a mail from at least 5 schools saying, can you please incorporate play-based learning into our schools as well? So somewhere it's definitely being understood and it's
correct. Passionate. Correct. Wow. What an amazing conversation. Shweta, on that note, thank you so much. You know, I'm so fascinated and amazed with the incredible amount of passion that you have for Toy Bank, thank you so much for taking me through this amazing journey that you've had from collecting, from teaching to collecting toys, to now becoming virtually an activist for play-based learning. Thank you again and good luck to you.
Thanks a lot, Ashwin. It was really nice talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.